from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and happy 4th of July. Welcome to a special July 4th edition of Washington Watch. I hope you you took a few moments today to, in the midst of all of the festivities, which are still ongoing. I know the fireworks come after dark. But to take a few moments, especially parents, if you got kids, grandparents, pull the grandkids in and you know, share with them a story from American history. Let them understand a little bit about the importance of this day and what it means. You know, I have fond memories as a kid in the little town I grew up in. July 4th, we always had a parade, and they let the kids decorate their bicycles, you know, with the paper, the different colored papers, and you'd put the baseball cards in the spokes, and it'd make the noise. And, you know, it was just exciting to go down there. But I always remember that at the lead of the parade, and this sticks with me. I mean, this is a long time ago. At the lead of the parade were the veterans from the VFW. And, you know, some of them just had parts of uniforms that still fit. You know, they'd have their hats on. Some of them would have their jackets on. But back then, I mean, there was actually some of the veterans from World War One. I mean, this has been a long time ago. But I remember as they would carry the flag, and they would do so with such distinction and honor. I recall everybody just kind of, and my dad taught me this, and I wondered why it happened, but my dad taught me that you respected the flag, and you would see people who would be sitting on the curb, but when the flag would come, they would stand up. And it was an understanding of, you know, it wasn't just patriotism. It was an understanding of freedom. And today we're going to talk about that. We're going to take a look at the meaning of Independence Day, the Declaration of Independence, and what the founders, what their intentions were in the importance of religious freedom in the midst of this discussion of freedom. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Professor Linda Valson of Liberty University. She's going to be joining us to share her thoughts about the foundational role of religious freedom in America. Then we'll be joined by our good friend Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas and why protecting and promoting religious freedom in America is essential to our future freedoms. And then we'll be joined by Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, to talk about why religious freedom should be and is, in this administration, a priority in our foreign policy. He'll also give us an overview of the status of religious freedom around the world. He just returned from Nigeria about a week ago, so we're going to talk with him about that. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can join me at T. Perkins. All right. Well, as we said, today we celebrate Independence Day, the Declaration of Independence. With us now is Professor Linda Valson. She is a professor of law at Liberty University and has a long history of practicing constitutional law and working on religious freedom cases. Professor, you are also at Liberty Counsel as a senior litigation counselor there, and you have knowledge of where religious freedom and constitutional principles intersect. So we welcome you here to Washington Watch on this special day, July 4th.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I really appreciate where you started because I think we've really lost respect and understanding of what our veterans have done, what they fight for, and also how important the truths in the Declaration of Independence are. And I think it's really the foundation of what we have started as and a roadmap as to why we got off track and where we are today in so many areas.
Well, let's talk a little bit about off track. How far off track from the Declaration of Independence and those founding principles have we gone?
We're pretty far off track in my perspective. You know, if you look at three core things in the second paragraph, the beginning of the Declaration of Independence, it recognizes that we have truths that are self-evident, which means they're objective. And yet we have a culture today that everything is relative. Our definition of what is right for me is supposed to be different than your definition of right. So we've abandoned objective truths. It acknowledges that we have a creator that endowed us with certain inalienable rights. One, we don't acknowledge as a nation that we have a creator that even created us, and certainly that he would form the definition of what our rights are, because we've adopted a lot of things as rights that really are inconsistent with his standards, and that there are true that we are all endowed with life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And what is liberty? Is it the right to do whatever you want, or is it confined by that creator who has certain moral principles? So it's the roadmap for how we've gotten off track by, you know, really adopting rights that are inconsistent with his standards. We see that in protecting life or the lack of protecting life, the way we've redefined family, and even our protection of First Amendment rights and free speech rights and really silencing opposition. So that's just sort of in a nutshell some of the ways that we've gotten off track.
Well, you can start, Professor, right there where you said that, you know, mm-hmm. we're endowed by our creator. I mean, we've denied the fact that we have a creator. And well, the first thing that came to mind when you mentioned that, something we were talking about last week on the program, about the whole idea of gender, that we can declare our gender at birth or at any time we want, that flies in the face of the idea that we have a creator, as Jesus said in Matthew 19, that have you not read from the beginning, he created them male and female. So, I mean, the very essentials in such evident aspects as biology are being denied now.
Absolutely. And I focus a lot on liberty in a lot of the research that I've done. And over time, we've moved away from understanding that liberty. For example, the 1828 Webster Dictionary, as close as the founding as we've got for a dictionary, it understood that it's the right to define, you know, what you want to do, constrained by the laws of nature, God's standards. So if you take the issue and move it forward to where we are today and protecting the idea that I think I'm a different gender, it abandons the idea that God created us a certain way, and we're really allowing people to adopt as true something that we know is not true. Because we've adopted as liberty on a number of opinions over the years, this idea is that I get to define for myself my own right of existence, the truths of the universe. That's not the right understanding of liberty that our founders had.
So let's okay, we've gotten off track. I think we can pretty quickly establish that fact, and I think most of our listeners get that. How important, though, are these biblical foundations, these principles that we've talked about, we obviously know the founders built the nation upon those, okay? You can look at that in their quotes. You talked about the I actually have the dictionary, Webster Dictionary, on my shelf at home. So those facts are indisputable for people who are honest. How important, though, are they for the future if we deviate from them? How essential is it that we get back to that if we want to survive as a nation?
Well, let me start first with one verse from the Bible in Proverbs 14. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. So, you know, and there's other verses, but the Bible is clear that how we as a people govern ourselves has ramifications for us and our future. And I look at the law as something that should be normative. And so if we are establishing laws, say that things that truly are wrong and sinful are good because we've made them law, let's just say abortion, for example. And we've made it law so people feel it is good, but it's not. It's the destruction of life. If you continue down that path, it's moving further and further away from objective truth, God's standards, and it's only going to blind people to the truth all the more.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, a special July 4th edition. Professor Rena Lindevalson, my guest. She's a professor at Liberty University. Professor, we talked about these principles. Are there any of the recent Supreme Court decisions that actually reaffirm these foundational principles?
Pleased to say yes. And in fact, you know, just the last few weeks have been a great time. You know, we had the masterpiece cake decision with the cake shop. So Jack Phillips says you have to bake that cake for the same-sex wedding. And although it was a bit limited in its scope, it reaffirmed the idea that we are not going to tolerate religious hostility, because the commissioners in his case overtly demeaned his religious beliefs, called it rhetoric, called it as despicable, and that was too far for the Supreme Court. So it really put a halt in some respects to a path that we've been going on, that we could silence Judeo-Christian beliefs. And more, also recently we've had the pro-life case coming out of, you know, the California and moving its way up to the Supreme Court. Pro-life pregnancy centers are not required, cannot be forced to speak in a way that supports abortion. That's a bit inconsistent with some prior cases that were out there. And then also even just union dues. There was a decision that was rendered, you can't be forced to pay dues to support something you don't believe in. But there's language in those decisions that acknowledges that we value the ability of people to speak what they want to say. It's important to our form of government. And if government is in the business of silencing speech, all people are harmed. And that was actually the language in the union dues case.
All right, Professor, I'm going to give you a softball question.
Okay.
You're a professor. You're working to equip young people with this understanding of biblical principles. You're also training them to be lawyers, to be in the legal arena. How important is it that we have young people equipped with this foundational understanding of what our country was created to be? How important is it that they have that understanding to enter into today's legal world?
It is vital. Our founders over and over expressed the need for an educated citizenry. And if we don't educate our future lawyers who are going to be policymakers, judges, writing for judges, if they don't understand the biblical foundations, the understanding of the Constitution, the purpose of those guarantees in the Declaration, we're going to continue on the track that we're on. I did not go to a Christian law school, didn't have that opportunity, so I understand the two different ways of teaching. To know that there's objective truth rooted in everything that we do in this universe, including our legal system, drastically changes how you view how you use the law, interpret the Constitution, and interpret it in a way that best protects our freedoms.
Well, let me ask you this question then. For those young people out there that are considering law as a profession, they feel like maybe the Lord's calling them that direction, they have an interest there. What would you say to them in terms of law schools? Should they go to a Christian law school or a non-Christian? What would be your recommendation?
Wholeheartedly, my recommendation is, particularly as someone who believes in the Bible, believes in truth, you need to go and study under those who studied the law from a biblical perspective. You're not going to get that any place else, and it's really difficult, if not impossible, to do that on your own. And so you want to be trained to use the law for good and not to use the law for a system that really is one that's might makes right. And that's what you get taught in most of the law schools. That's not the purpose of law. So I would encourage them to pursue and seek out a Christian law school.
And with that, you know, there's so many areas that people are called to and they can make a difference. The law field, the field of law, is that an area where you think that is essential that we have these Christians so that we can move our nation back to this understanding, not just in understanding, but in practice, these principles?
I do, and I understand that, you know, laws don't change people's lives, but the legal system is part of it. And if it weren't for organizations defending our religious freedoms, you know, we would be silenced. And so we stand in the gap pushing back the attempt to silence truth, and we need people doing that. We need people on local city councils and involved in, you know, the court decisions that are proclaiming the truth and understanding of the Constitution. So we are one part of the overall, you know, ministry that God has to see his truth propagated here.
Professor Rena Linda Valson, thank you so much for joining us today on this July 4th.
Thank you.
And appreciate the conversation. And, you know, I guess I have a little bit of a selfish interest here asking these questions because I actually have a will soon be a senior in college that is considering law school. She's a sharp one and a scrapper, too. She'll make a good lawyer. All right, coming up next, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas will be here to discuss why protecting and promoting religious freedom in America is essential to our future freedom as Americans. Don't go away. Back with more after this.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Welcome back to this special July 4th edition of Washington Watch. I hope you're having a great day, and I hope you've got plans for this evening. And let me encourage you once again, take just a few moments at some point in time to pull the family together. If you're by yourself, take time to do it yourself. Remind yourself, read from some of the founders the importance of what we're celebrating. I mean, the 4th of July, also known as Independence Day, or July 4th, has been a federal holiday in the United States since 1941. But the tradition of Independence Day celebrations goes back to the 18th century and the American Revolution. In fact, I remember reading John Adams writing to his wife right after the Declaration was signed, predicting. It's really uncanny, his prediction of this would be a day that would be remembered and celebrated with fireworks and picnics and shooting guns, if you're in the South. He nailed it. He really did. But when we talk about our freedom, how essential is religious freedom for these other freedoms to be maintained and to flourish? Well, joining us now is our good friend, Congressman Louie Gohmert. He represents the First Congressional District of Texas. He's a member of the House Judiciary Committee and serves as Vice Chairman of the Judiciary Subcommittee on Crime, Terrorism, and Homeland Security. Louie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to talk to you, Tony. Great to be with you. Thanks.
Well, in Texas, you can shoot guns on July 4th, can't you?
Yes, you can. But you do have to make sure it's outside of the city limits. Normally, you're not allowed to shoot guns inside the city limits, so be careful.
Don't shoot it up in the air. Shoot it down on the ground.
Yeah, well, and then there was a lady down in Jacksonville that had some gas spill back on her when it cut off, and then she lit a cigarette, and while she was riding along, it set her arm on fire, and she got pulled over for waving a firearm within the city limits. So you got to be careful about this.
Oh, Louie Gohmert, there you go. That sounds like something I said.
Anyway,
not going to borrow that one, okay? I'm not going to borrow
right.
that
well,
one.
Well, it is July 4th, and we have so much to be grateful for. And you mentioned our religious freedom and its importance, and we have seen threats coming our way when it comes to religious freedom. We have seen people claiming that evangelical Christians are the biggest hate threat group in America. It's all the things that have been happening in the world since time began, except in America. People were not persecuted in America because they were Christians. But now it has started. Why? Because we have not been vigilant in protecting our freedom of religion. And as John Adams said, you mentioned John Adams' letter to Abigail, where he talked about, you know, that it'll be celebrated. And he was quite prophetic in what he had to say. But he said in a speech while he was president, I believe it was 1797, and I'm quoting from memory, hopefully that's accurate, but he said, "This Constitution is meant for a religious and moral people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other." And he understood that if we are not going to be teaching right and wrong, if we're not going to be teaching Judeo-Christian rights and obligations and responsibilities and morals, then we're not going to be able to keep a Second Amendment right. We won't be able to keep a freedom of speech or a freedom of assembly. And all of these other freedoms are going to have to go away because we will not be safe if people have the Second Amendment right to bear arms, and yet we're not teaching moral right and wrong. So when people talk about, oh, we got to do away with guns, well, if you're going to take away the teaching of right and wrong, yes, we will. But I want to have a moral and religious country like John Adams was talking about so that we can keep our Second Amendment rights and Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights and First as well. So it's really up to us. It's up to each generation to make sure we teach right and wrong. And the Judeo-Christian principles on which this country was founded are absolutely essential in order to keep the constitutional rights we have. Otherwise, we're going to lose them.
Well, in preceding John Adams, George Washington, in his farewell address, wrote of his four pillars, two of those being morality and religion.
Yes.
And he cautioned, he said, let me caution you that you cannot have morality without religion. And, of course, we saw in the 60s the Supreme Court making decisions, taking prayer and Bible out of our schools, and then we saw, the moral implosion. But I think it's very important what you said a moment ago. I think people need to realize that while we've lost these religious freedoms, not far behind them are all the other freedoms. So whether you're indifferent toward religion or not, you need to realize the connectedness those other freedoms have to religious freedom.
Yeah, that's so true. My wife and I were watching Paul, Apostle of Christ, I think is the name of it, a new video out on DVD, and recent past. But anyway, it talked about how Nero was blaming the Christians for things, and I thought, wow, that's kind of what's going on now. People are blaming the Christians for things. But in Nero's day, it went so far as to build up hatred, and they were encouraging people to accuse Christians and get in their face and run them out and let them know you don't want them around here. I'm thinking, wow.
Sounds like Maxine Waters.
Sounds rather familiar, and it's not just Maxine. I mean, even the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights and others have been saying these are the threats we got to go after.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you.
Hey, Louie, we're up against a break. Can you stick around?
You bet I can.
Okay, hold on. We're going to come right back. We're going to finish our conversation with our good friend, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. He represents the 1st Congressional District, and he's a real fighter for freedom on Capitol Hill. We're going to finish our conversation with him on this special edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're coming back with more right after this.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide. Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
This is Washington Watch. Welcome to this July 4th edition. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Our guest, Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. He represents the 1st Congressional District. Louie, thanks for sticking around.
You bet.
I know you got to get out there and shoot your gun.
Happy 4th of July. You bet.
Yeah. Just don't stay away from the gas can, okay? Let's talk about, well, let me ask you this question first, kind of a personal question in terms of, you know, religious freedom, okay? There are those, and you were talking about those who are trying to chase Christians out of the public square. And there's really, under the Obama administration, I mean, it was really getting to the point that you had to, there was this sense that you had to check your faith at the door of the public service, whatever that might be, whether it's a police officer, fireman, or member of Congress. How important is your faith as a Christian? How important is that to your role in public of serving the public?
Well, without my Christian faith, there is not the duty and the obligation toward honor and the obligation toward right and wrong. It without the beliefs and doing everything for the glory of God, that means what I do has got to honor God and follow the biblical teachings. And when you have that innate desire to, you know, please the Heavenly Father, please earthly father and mother, I mean, it drives us toward, you know, being better people. And that's why in Romans 13, I guess 3, I believe it is, it talks about, you know, government's supposed to be an encourager for good conduct. And the government is not supposed to be the religious teacher, but it is supposed to be a religious encourager. And that's exactly what Washington mm-hmm. was and Adams yep. was. Especially you get to abolitionists like John Quincy Adams and Daniel Webster. I mean, let's face it, the great awakening of the 1700s ended up leading to the revolution, that people wanted righteousness and fairness and they weren't getting those things, so they fought farther. And then in the 1800s, the Second Great Awakening, leading to the end of slavery, as John Quincy Adams and Daniel Webster gave great speeches about, you know, how can we expect God to keep blessing America when we're putting brothers and sisters in chains and bondage? And that inspired Abraham Lincoln, listening to those speeches for about a year before John Quincy Adams passed away, when Lincoln and Adams were both in the U.S. House of Representatives. But they were driven by this desire to honor God and to follow God's leadings, and that means righteousness, and that means, you look back at Proverbs, it means that if you're part of the government, you never favor people because they're poor, and you never favor people because they're rich. You do everything fairly and justly and righteously. Well, those are the things that are taught in the Bible. They're taught as the makeup of our Heavenly Father. And so if you are not driven by those kind of desires, then you're going to end up needing a totalitarian government, because you just can't trust people with weapons and to have freedom of assembly and freedom of speech. Because if you have not taught people that provoking words are never a defense to a physical assault, then somebody may say something about your religion, and in your mind that justifies killing them, unless they've been taught the Judeo-Christian values that, no, provoking words are never a defense to a physical assault. That's been the law. It's not under Sharia, but it is and was under the law that grew up in the United States. So it is incredibly important, not that everybody in America followed Jesus, but Tony, I recall having conversation with a guy named Mike Pence when he was a representative, and Jeb Hensarling and a couple other guys, we were standing around on the floor of the House, and Mike said, you know, if we could ever just get the people of the United States to repent and turn from their wicked ways and pray and seek God's faith. I said, Mike, that's not what it says. It says, if my people, we don't even need a majority of the United States. Yep. If we just have the Christians that would turn from wicked ways, that would pray and seek God's face and turn from their wicked way, then he would heal our land. It's God's people. If we will do what we know needs to be done, then this place will be healed, and we could have another 200 years of being the greatest country in the world, in the history of the world.
You are absolutely right. I cannot top that, my friend. Congressman Louis Gohmert, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us on this 4th of July.
Tony, I love talking to you on the air, off the air, anytime I get to talk to you. God bless you. Thanks for all you do.
All right, brother. Thank you. Congressman Louis Gohmert of Texas. And you know what? That's exactly why this past Sunday, we had Call to Fall. It's up to us. If we'll fall on our faces before God, declaring our dependence upon him, we'll enjoy our independence as a nation. Don't go away. When we come back, Ambassador Sam Brownback is here. Don't go away.
Should state law require pregnancy resource centers to provide free advertising for the abortion industry? Congressman Andy Harris has spent his life serving his neighbors, country, and community, and has become one of the foremost advocates in Congress who has stood with these pregnancy resource centers as the Supreme Court determines whether the state can force individuals or private entities to act in contradiction to their beliefs. In 2017, the U.S. witnessed its lowest abortion rate since 1975, proving that these pro-life pregnancy centers have had a positive impact despite radical pro-abortion activists trying to violate First Amendment rights. Don't miss Representative Harris's discussion of the ongoing fight to protect the sanctity of life, as well as the First Amendment rights of those standing for the pro-life cause. Visit frc.org/lectures to view this important event.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch. Again, happy 4th of July, one of my favorite holidays. Just a time to get together with family, but also to, we take this, as I said earlier, we take a moment to reflect on the importance of this day, a celebration of our independence as a nation. But as we've talked about in preceding programs, as we had this past weekend, the call to fall, where we, in churches across the nation, on our knees, declaring our dependence upon God. And that's where our independence comes from. And as we've been talking about in this special, about the importance of freedom and religious freedom being at the heart of these freedoms, this administration domestically has done a lot to restore religious freedom in this country, but they've also gone about systematically advancing religious freedom abroad. And the two are connected, but what I'm seeing internationally is very significant. And it starts with the administration making a pick for ambassador at large for religious freedom, international religious freedom. The former governor of Kansas, a former state, former senator from Kansas, as well as congressman, Ambassador Sam Brownback, and he joins us now, just returning just days ago from a trip to Nigeria to work on the issue of religious persecution there. I cannot think of a better individual that the president could have chosen to head up this initiative of religious liberty internationally than Sam Brownback. Ambassador, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Tony. It's always great to join you, and thank you for that introduction, that kind introduction. But the applause goes to the administration. This administration is very serious about religious liberty, about religious freedom here and abroad, and I'm delighted to be a part of this team that's willing to push this stuff and push it hard. We're in regular contact throughout the administration, particularly with the vice president's office on religious freedom issues, and there is a lot happening because of the push that this team's putting on it.
Yeah, the vice president and the president, both. But I was with just a couple of weeks ago with the vice president. We were actually talking about you and your role, and the vice president could not have been more pleased with you in this position and talked about casting the deciding vote in the Senate that put you into that spot, but reaffirming that the president himself, in fact, that was the day that the president met with the North Korean leader, and we were discussing the fact that the president is not going to miss an opportunity to address the issue of human rights and religious freedom. And you've seen that. You've seen that when he met with the president of Nigeria, bringing this issue to the forefront.
And that was a dynamic moment that he did that. And he went out on a limb a little bit, because most of the talking points on this are that, okay, you need to kind of be balanced, and this has multiple sets of reasons and causes of what's going on in Nigeria. And he comes out and says to the president of Nigeria, you need to start protecting these Christians. They're getting killed all over the place, which is true. And I met with a number of leaders over there, political and religious leaders there, were very thankful that the president took such a fine point on this and said things changed after that. Now, it's still a very difficult and deadly environment. The day after I leave, there's 200 people killed in an ethnic religious conflict that went back and forth. So it's still a very dangerous place, but the president got the topic out there and put it on the radar screen and put it on point for the country of Nigeria.
Well, let's talk about the landscape right now as you see it. I know you've been there's so many different places you could go, because it's such it's almost pandemic when you look at this religious persecution. So I want to get a feel for what you're seeing around the globe, and then what you're already seeing happening in terms of these other countries taking note that America has put a priority on religious freedom again.
Well, unfortunately, 3 of 4 people in the world live in countries where there's substantial religious intolerance or persecution, or they just can't practice their faith freely. 3/4 of the world lives in that type of environment. The good side about it is you now have an administration that's aggressively pushing on this topic, and we're also pointing out to people, and this is true, if you want to grow an economy, you need to have religious freedom. That'll help you grow your economy. If you want more stability and less terrorism, you get more of it with religious freedom. So we're putting this out there as a full package of a really key way for you to go as a country. And we're seeing now more of them lean in. Saudi Arabia is really starting to talk the right way, and I didn't think in my lifetime I would see that happening. Now, there's steps that need to take place, obviously. The government in Egypt, President Sisi, and you've been there, really making substantial steps. Now, that's at the presidential level. It's still very, very difficult for people at the grassroots level, but something started. And you're seeing this happening in more and more places where people are recognizing the importance of this, and that the role of government is to protect the right, not to pick a winner or a loser.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Special July 4th edition. Ambassador Sam Brownback, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, my guest, as we're talking about freedom, religious freedom being at the core of this. And really the guiding understanding of this, Ambassador, is the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights that the United Nations put forward that articulates that religious freedom, and of course the United States have played a large part in drafting that, but religious freedom is not an American right, it's a human right. And that's the ability to choose one's religion, to change one's religion, or not to have a religion. And that's what America is pushing for, advocating for, is simply the right to make a choice.
It is. And it's a fundamental right. And I get to explain this in front of all sorts of audiences of different faith orientation or no faith orientation. But people get it, that this is your right as a dignified human being to be able to pick what you do with your own soul, and that no government has the right to interfere with that. And that government does have a role, but the role is to protect the right. And the beauty about it is in the American context and view, this is a God-given right. This isn't a right that you get from government, but it's a right that government protects. You know, and as soon as you explain that to people in that type of context, that this is part of your dignity as an individual, people inherently get it. They go, yeah, that is my right. And I do need to be able to have that. And my government needs to protect that right for me to practice that.
And the right is to choose whether to believe or not to believe, and to follow one's, you know, whatever religion one wants to have. And as a government, you know, our role is not to dictate to a particular people a faith, but a choice, the freedom to choose, underscoring the importance of this human right. And going back to what you said a moment ago, Ambassador, the evidence, this is empirical evidence now that shows very clearly the correlation between religious freedom, economic growth stability, domestic stability, all of these things flow from a respect of this fundamental human right.
It does. I just recently met with the ambassador of UAE, United Arab Emirates, and they've got one of the better records, and they've got a good record in the Middle East on religious freedom, and have become really much more of a model in the region, and a very dynamic economy, and pretty good on stability, still have difficulties, but they are embracing this concept and saying, this is the way forward for us to grow. The Arab population world is generally a young population, and there's a lot of restiveness there. They've got to grow this economy. They need stability. They need less terrorism. This is the way to go. And the ambassador and I of UAE were talking about this, of them really projecting that message in the region, because they've had such good economic growth, not based on oil, mm-hmm. but based on being an open society and protecting these rights.
And you, the Middle East needs some leaders on this.
Yeah.
You know, as you mentioned, Saudi Arabia has been at the top of the list in terms of religious persecution or lack of freedom. And it's good to see some of the openings that are taking place there, and even baby steps are an improvement. But this is being nurtured, from my observation, and I want to ask you if you see it the same way or see it differently, that these baby steps that we're seeing in some of these countries that have long denied religious freedom is being encouraged and nurtured by the priority that this administration places on religious freedom.
It is. It is. You know, people pick up the tune that the United States puts out there, because we're such a key player in the world stage, and we're the ones that drives a human rights agenda. Well, prior administrations they didn't really emphasize, particularly the last administration didn't emphasize this, and in some respects was kind of torn about it. Now, I think Rabbi Saperstein, who was in this job before, did a very good job. But I think they just had difficulty, and it wasn't the priority.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this administration, now it's a priority, and people get that. And then we've got the data points behind it as well. And on top of that, Tony, it's a big deal. It's not a little deal. This is what one guy used to tell me about. When you're working on things, whether it's in government or private sector, major on the majors, not on the minors. This is a major thing.
And that's being reflected by the emphasis that this administration is placing on it. You know, we've talked about the president, the vice president. Obviously, domestically, they've been focused on religious freedom. The vice president, very supportive of this agenda, but the president himself, very, very vocal and supportive of this. But when we're talking about international religious freedom, to see the president put a fellow Kansan in the spot of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who has a record of being committed to this issue of religious freedom, that, I would have to say, is one of the single biggest steps forward, in addition to the selection, your selection as ambassador at large. That sends a very strong message. In fact, he wasted no time in calling a special meeting of international leaders on the issue of religious freedom, which is coming up very soon.
First ever. Never been done before. Secretary Pompeo is first ministerial, and that's where he's calling foreign ministers from around the world together here in Washington, D.C. Topic is religious freedom. When he made the announcement, he said, this is the first ever, and that's on purpose. And this is my first ministerial, and that's on purpose as well, that I'm doing on this topic, because it's just so foundational. It's important. It's something he believes in. It's something the administration believes in. So that's going to take place July 24th to 26th. I'd ask people to pray about that. There'll be foreign ministers from all over the world. There'll be NGO, non-governmental organizations in. There'll be religious leaders here, civil society. We'll really fill up the whole week on the topic of religious freedom. And then we want to push it out from here to other countries and other regions around the world. We're already talking to other countries about hosting religious freedom summits in their country or their region to continue to push this, because we want to drive this agenda. The last administration did a beautiful job, really, if you think about it, of driving a climate change agenda. And you can comment one way or the other what you want to about it, but they did a fabulous job of driving the agenda. Well, we want to drive the agenda of religious freedom, this fundamental right, and it's starting to take shape.
So this ministerial that will be taking place here in Washington is the first step, where you collectively bring these leaders together. But there'll be some specific action steps that flow from this, so that it's not just a meeting, a conference that people gather to hear speakers, but there'll be homework and there'll be follow-up to make sure this stuff is happening.
Yes. Yeah. As mentioned, the follow-on meetings. One of the things that several number of people are working on is getting the Abrahamic faith leaders together in Israel and the Vatican and Saudi Arabia around the statement that our faith does not support the use of violence in the promotion or propagation of the faith. And having religious leaders get behind that statement and say it. We're really trying to sow the seeds out there of a religious freedom. And in society, not just government. It's one thing for government to do it and push it, and it's important. But the societal level, where people live on a daily basis, for people to be able to practice their faith freely around their neighbors, whether their neighbor agrees with their faith or not.
We're about out of time, Ambassador, but as we celebrate this 242nd birthday of the United States, when you look at all of these things that are happening right now, not just in America but around the world, how unique of a time is this, and how excited should people be that we can literally make a difference worldwide?
I regularly sit in awe thinking of the moment where you can have a global reach at any point in time of the day, where people can talk with each other, where I get text messages and phone messages and information from around the world of what's taking place, almost real time. And then this moment of realization of how important this is to have this freedom for individuals. It's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary time of opportunity and great peril, too, really, Tony, because the things could go south hard, easy, and it can be deaths that come out of it. But it's also just this extraordinary opportunity for this chance of religious freedom to expand rapidly and people to be able to connect.
And that needs to be our prayer and our focus. Ambassador, we're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us and wish you a happy 4th of July.
Same to you. God bless you all.
All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a happy 4th of July. And remember, until next time, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.